Spoiler alert! Before listening, we will be spoiling parts of this film and others. If you wish to watch this film spoiler-free, you better turn back now before it's too late. Don't tell me, I already warned you. Now, on with the show. Welcome to Post Cut Feature Tableau. I am stage and voice talent Sarah Peterson. With me in the room, I have VFX artist David Vierkamp.
Hello there.
And I have writer and editor David M. Brown.
Hello.
Today we are going to be discussing a vignette from the film Freddy vs. Jason. We're going to be doing a little bit of an in-depth analysis of a feature scene, which is absolutely one of my favorite scenes, entitled Welcome to My Nightmare. It's really the first scene where we see the two monsters come together in this film and really duke it out in the sense of the actual, what the fans really wanted within the film.
Right. And it's the first confrontation. So it's like any real world fight. They kind of feel each other out at the beginning.
Yeah. Sizing each other up, figuring out everything.
And then they really get into it.
So one of the reasons why we chose this scene, and really I chose the scene, is it is one of my favorite scenes within the franchise. You really see the power that Freddy has over his victims in the dream world, as well as the power that Jason has, being completely oblivious to the fact that he's asleep because he's been dead for the entire series. He doesn't even know what awake or asleep is.
Right.
So going into the analysis of this scene, it really is a power struggle between the two. And you really get this vibe that Freddy is this massive stalker.
Mm.
And when I say stalker, in all of the films, you never really see how he understands his people's fear. You just assume that he knows it because he's in their dreams and he knows all that.
But he would have to be in their dream in a silent way or an non-visual way where they don't know he's there. And he proves that. And I think one of the best way he does this with Jason is that Jason finds himself in the classic boiler room with his mother yelling at him about having to kill people. And you're only supposed to kill a few, but you messed it up and you kept killing. And then she disappears and you realize it's actually Freddy disguised as his mother. So he already knows a given weakness of Jason, which is his mother. He wants to please her. And then he eventually learns his main weakness at the end of the
scene. Right. He already knows that his mother is a weakness because he used her originally to get him out of the water and start killing people, which is what he wanted to do.
Right.
But I think it's interesting because it also showcases that Freddy doesn't know everything. And even in the boiler room, which is like his cliche first move, to scare people, it doesn't work on Jason right away. Actually, it doesn't really work at all.
It doesn't work at all because, like she said, he doesn't know the difference between sleep and awake. And how do you kill something that's already dead?
Right. And his iconic line, "Why won't you die?"
Right.
Is absolutely, I would say, the turning point of that scene.
Mm.
Because he's trying to figure him out. And you can see the wheels in his head turning. And some of the notes that I took on this scene, when you start out with the scene, it starts out from a high-low perspective.
Right.
Where Freddy has the high ground. Mm-hmm. It's that iconic...
The powerful position.
The powerful position. Right. It's that iconic line, "I have the high ground." He is sitting there and he comes down to Jason's level as his mother and is like sitting there and belittling him, basically taking the power away from Jason because he's really just beating him down with his words.
Right, because the mother is in the high position too, I remember.
The
right?
mother starts at the high position, but as she comes down the stairs and you can feel, I don't know if you felt it, but how when I watch it, I feel her almost stomping down those stairs.
But yeah, you see also the close up when you get to her face, it's still at that low angle looking up at her.
Right.
Like he's a little boy again.
Well,
looking
and
up
he
at
is.
Her.
And the other thing is, you find out it's Freddy disguised as his mother, but the eagle eyed viewer, the viewer who knows both franchises, knows that Jason's mother would never belittle him like that.
Right.
She's always, because how does he start with it? Freddy starts with saying, "Oh, my special boy, Jason," loving kind of side. And then he goes into belittling him. But like I said, the eagle-eyed viewer, the viewer who has watched both of these franchises from day one, will know that that was Freddy like that.
Right. And even in that sense, because I've never watched the Friday the 13th films until Freddy versus Jason, I had only been familiar with Freddy Krueger. So I knew his tricks. Mm. So you know from, even if you haven't seen both franchises, you know from that perspective that Freddy is pulling a trick on him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you're only the big fan of one given franchise, right, you'll still be able to figure out that the mother was Freddy.
One of the things I really wanted to pull up on was the idea that Freddy believes that he's the stronger of the two and that Jason's the weaker of the two because he essentially gave Jason the power and he wanted to take it back. And it was that real moment of belittling that he's trying to take that power back from Jason. Because as you're watching the overtone of the film, you know that Jason's taking kills away from Freddy throughout the entirety of Jason waking up, which is him giving him the power to go to Elm Street. She's like, yeah, go to Elm Street. You have to. The children need to pay.
Right.
I also would like to state that Jason doesn't care.
Right.
Freddy's the only one who cares about him losing kills. He's the only one with the ego, you know?
Because
it's Freddy's, what do you call it?
Proactive.
Freddy's proactiveness that is causing the entire plot of the entire movie to happen.
Right.
Jason is just an object and an obstacle.
Well, Jason is that reactive. Mm-hmm. He's a reactive nature because Jason does not, with few exceptions in the franchise, Jason does not kill until the teenagers come into his area.
Right.
A couple of times he ventures out from Camp Crystal Lake, and the first time he ventures out of Camp Crystal Lake is to kill the girl that survived the first movie. So they do establish that he will go out of his territory. But it got weaker throughout the franchise, and that's another thing.
And isn't he, like, pulled out by the cast or people? Like, I know there's a space one where, like, isn't he just brought out of the Crystal Lake?
Well, every new time Jason is awakened, you have to suspend your point of disbelief. Because the whole point of the movie, everybody knows this, every fan of it knows it. They're made to be fun, they're made to scare you, they're made, you know, they're made to gross you out. They're not award-winning films. They're not going to be up for Best Picture or Best Writing. We know this.
But still flock to them.
But we still flock to them because, one, we like to be scared. When you're a teenager, you got to bring your girlfriend to the scary movie so she hangs on to you.
Right. Which is funny because I'm not that stereotypical girl. I love
But you still
movies.
Like to be scared. That's the whole point. So you do go to these films to be scared. And it's that primal thing. And people will say, oh, it desensitizes you to violence and everything. But most of the time, the violence is so over the top. It's cartoonish.
Even the gore is like almost completely fake looking. But it's just fun. It's fun costume. It's fun. It's a fun movie in a way. Like, because, you know, on this production set, a lot of the people are just having fun, you know? The plot doesn't have to matter.
No, it doesn't. And it doesn't have to matter in how the killer comes back. You just know he's coming back.
Right. And every time that Freddy comes back, it's one of those absolutely over the top, out of the box kind of ways because it fits with his character, which is why this scene is so important to the entire franchise, because it definitely shows you he has a comfort zone. And that boiler room is basically his Camp Crystal Lake.
Correct.
And that's why he brings Jason there.
And I also like the fact that while he's playing the pinball, and it's cheesy enough where they actually have pinball sounds in the background, him hitting the bell and everything like that.
And going tilt.
Yeah, that's Freddy. Freddy's original personality wasn't necessarily like that. Gradually, when they figured out that he doesn't just have to be a standard slasher and he can kill people in just about any way he wants, especially if he figures out what they fear the most, now he can get goofy and still have it be disgusting in terms of the gore, but funny and have a little comic relief. And again, I've said this about horror movies, right around the third one is when you start rooting for the killer, because you look at the teenagers and you just think, wow, you are really dumb. I mean,
let's hide behind the wall of chainsaws.
Great commercial.
Forget about the running cars.
Exactly. And you know every trope is coming and you don't care. And you just say, sharpen your knives, sharpen your machete and get to it, man.
Well, here's an interesting question I want to ask both of you. Because, you know, when you watch the first Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, Freddy is just this creepy stalker kind of character. And even in the remake, it's very similar to the original in his personality. It's not very goofy, funny at all. Not a lot of one-liners. If they still did Freddy versus Jason and there's like no Nightmare on Elm Street sequels.
No, it wouldn't have worked.
Would the two characters be more similar? Because there'd be no divergence for that?
I don't even think the characters would be that similar. There would be no motivation for Freddy.
Mm-hmm. Right. There'd be no motivation to have them fight each other.
His goofiness that people actually, I feel like they don't appreciate, but it made him a unique character.
Well, the idea of Freddy versus Jason, when that came out, and this is probably a really good point to bring up, is that they were the two biggest horror movie franchises of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to bank on that.
They were the spearheads of the slasher genre.
Well, not only that, but...
Well, I have a dispute on that.
Okay.
Because the true birth of the slasher is Psycho, is Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho.
That's true.
The second upping is Halloween, because Halloween, he has characters named after Sam Loomis in Psycho. He has tropes of, like, the point of view shots of the killings and things like that. He's really the first one to actually show a knife penetrate a human body. And it's barely there. Michael Myers barely gets Laurie Strode's arm. Mm-hmm. Friday the 13th came out 2 years later and just upped the gore.
Right.
Right.
It brought in gore, not necessarily the slasher. The slasher had already been documented and done. They brought in the gore, which adds to the slasher.
Right. So that was like the evolved form of
exactly.
The slasher.
Exactly. Right. If you watch Psycho, Halloween, and then Friday the 13th Part 1.
And then Nightmare on Elm Street.
And then you see the evolution of it.
With the exception of Psycho, Halloween also, like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, had a slew of sequels and remakes.
Well, and that's the thing. So when you look at, and I pulled some actual numbers here, box office numbers from boxofficemojo.com. Now, I don't know how accurate these are, so we'll take them with a grain of salt.
Mm.
In the United States alone, Freddy Krueger, as a franchise, we're talking 9 films here, $370 million. Worldwide, $457 million.
That's not bad.
It's not bad.
As of what date was they
report that? That was as of the last film that came out, which would have been 2012.
This is Watch Mojo that reported this?
Box Office Mojo.
Box Office Mojo. Okay.
Right. So Jason, in the United States, and it just is a tribute to how popular he is, $380 million, which is not bad. If you look at worldwide, $466 million. And I'm rounded numbers there, not reflecting inflation. They do have those reflected numbers in there. But you got to think, these guys are so similar in box office. Yes, Freddy's a little less popular, and it's because of the campiness of him.
Mm.
And Jason's just there for the gore factor. And let's face it, the nudity that you see in the...
Sure.
I mean...
There's always the gratuitous breast shot.
There's always.
They have their own catered audience. And if you really think about it, I mean, I would find Freddy scarier.
Because he comes in your dreams.
Right.
So maybe, not only that, maybe he scared off a few people who might be like, that's a little bit too much for me.
Yeah.
Also, didn't they, in their sequels, tease each other?
Yes. So in, I want to say Jason Takes Manhattan is where he loses the mask and you see the Freddy claw come out. Or is that Jason?
That's Jason, I think Jason Dies or something like that.
Or something like that.
Yeah. The final Friday.
The final Friday movie, you see this, Jason's mask's in the sand, and that's where you get the tease of Freddy versus Jason, where the Freddy claw comes out of the sand
and drags it down. And you hear Freddy's laugh.
The only time you see Jason, and I don't quote me on, I want to say it's A New Nightmare, and you very vaguely see someone wearing a Jason mask. Mm. That was Wes Craven's A New Nightmare. That was when Wes Craven went back to the film because he left the franchise after one.
After one, right.
Because he was done with it.
That one's a lot more of a departure, right?
Oh, New Nightmare is probably, in my opinion, the best Nightmare on Elm Street film.
This scene is still a very interesting scene.
Yes. So getting back to the scene, if you look at the colors that are chosen for this scene, it starts out in red, which is rage, which is a lot of just burning passion,
rage, danger.
Right.
Right.
It's the first clue that you're in a dangerous situation, and it's cloaked in red to the point where it's so saturated that you can't tell what is blood and what is red.
It's reminiscent to like silent films that when they wanted to change mood, they would put the gel over the lights on the set to give you like a cold mood, which would be blue, red for danger and things like that.
Right.
It harkens back to that, and you get a lot of that mood stuff in old horror movies.
Right. And what I really like about this is that you really feel the rage versus seeing it on, like, you can see the mom raging, you can see Freddy raging, but you really feel it more so than you see it.
And you also, in the beginning of the scene when the mother is belittling Jason, you kind of see, even though you only see his mask, but you can see his eyes through the mask if you pay attention. Like you said, Dave, he has that little boyish mm-hmm. oh, I did something wrong. And he gets kind of sheepish and he's like, I made mom mad and, you know, and I'm a bad boy and all that. And then that's when it's revealed that it's Freddy.
Right.
I forgot the plot of Jason's like death and stuff, but was he like autistic or something? And then he was just funny looking, I think.
He was, well, you would consider him to be deformed.
Right.
And probably slow.
Okay.
Because with that kind of deformity, the mother probably kind of...
Coddled him a lot.
Yeah, kept him inside, stuff like that. Mm. And then what it was is he drowned in the lake while two counselors were having sex. So she went and killed those two. And then like a decade later, she comes back because they're reopening the camp that it happened at. And she takes over and she starts killing everybody. And then you see him come out of the water.
Okay.
The gotcha. And then, so as the scene is going out, the pinball with the whole pinball sounds, mm-hmm. it's Freddy playing Jason. He's trying to figure out his fears. He's definitely trying to make a game out of him and he's finding it fun. And that's when you start seeing the color change a little bit more.
Yeah, the light, the red kind of lightens up.
The red lightens up as the playfulness goes
on. It yellows more.
Basically what happens then, and it's a major tone shift, is after he does the tilt scene where he drops the boiler on top of Jason and he goes, why won't you die? And Jason fights back. Mm-hmm. He realizes he doesn't have all of the power. And that's when you see the tone completely shift to the point where Freddy gets thrown. And in that throw, it's a really cool wipe kind of motion where it goes from red to green.
Mm, yeah, because mm-hmm. he's getting up from hitting, I think he hit a pipe or something
like
that.
Yeah, he hit a pipe and then you've got all this water spewing everywhere. And for people who know Jason, he doesn't like the water. And that's where Freddy, in the scene, you see it light up and he's like, oh, so you are afraid of something, as he sees Jason cower away from the water.
But you have that wall of water that's coming down. It's like a sheet.
It's right between them.
And Jason will not go through it. And that's when he realizes, okay, you're afraid of water. And you immediately question, Jason, why don't you walk around the wall of water? You don't have to go through it. You can walk around it. But it happens too quick because Freddy says, oh, now I know what you're afraid of. And he makes it in the dream encircle him in rain so that he can't move.
I also think it's interesting. Which I thought was really good. It's not like he just cowers away in water. It's the way that he portrays, like he's charging up to Freddy about to slash. And just like within inches of the water stream, he instantly freezes. Like all of a sudden his repressed memories hit him. And he slowly backs up, checks it out, and it's like, nope.
Yeah, not going through that. Yeah, right.
And before he even has a moment to have that thought of, let me walk around, which would he have actually had that thought?
Probably would have done. Because we know Jason can get around Camp Crystal Lake pretty quick.
Right.
So he does have a given thought process.
And he does have some nimbleness to him, mm-hmm. despite the fact that he does clunk around almost like a monster.
He's the wrecking ball monster, though.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about this movie, is that he's the tank.
And the symbolism of color, when you think about the color green, it's rebirth. It's
nature.
It's this big defining moment within someone. You usually have like your green aura, people say, or things like that when you go to palm readers and stuff like that. With Jason, in Jason's moment, it's his rebirth. Freddy is literally giving birth to a new Jason. Mm. Or in Freddy's case, I have a birth of a new idea on how to terrify you.
Yeah.
So it really has that duality of scene there. But it's not until that water flows does that color really change and really change the mood of that.
And what brings life? Water.
Water brings life.
Which is green.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of symbolism in that scene. And I know that a lot of people are going to be like, we're overanalyzing this.
But that's the whole point.
But authors make choices. I have always believed that authors make choices. Directors make choices.
Sure.
And you look at that scene, it's so beautifully acted because it's Robert Englund being Freddy Krueger. It is
the new guy being Jason.
The new guy being Jason.
Because that wasn't Kane Hodder.
Because it's not Kane Hodder.
And all Friday the 13th fans know that. They're upset
about
it.
It's one of those things that...
But in that scene, I think he did good.
They're beautiful.
He did fine, but it's just Kane Hodder brought something to Jason that I think nobody else really could. It's like Robert Englund. I know they remade Nightmare on Elm Street and with a good actor, Jackie Earl Haley, but it would be like replacing Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker.
Right.
Right.
It just won't feel the same.
Exactly. You cannot replace Robert Englund as Freddy.
It's because they're iconic, and that's the thing.
And it goes to how scenes parallel each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In this scene, when Freddy goes to attack Jason at the beginning, he jumps down from his perch and Jason chops off both of his arms.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, oh, not my arm, you know, but then Freddy, being in the dream world, gets up and he can regrow his arm instantaneously. Right. The scene that parallels it is the last fight, which takes place in reality.
Right.
And Jason cuts off Freddy's arm and he cannot regrow it. Mm-hmm. And he ends up stabbing him with it.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful parallel.
Yes.
It's a beautiful callback to say, it's Jason's way of saying, you're in my world now. And
which reflects the line that Laurie screams, welcome to my world.
Yeah, right.
Because right. We don't swear on this show.
We don't want to swear on this show.
All the editing I don't have to do.
But again, fans of Freddy know exactly the word we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, you know exactly
about.
The lines. So. Be on the lookout for more special episodes like this. We have some wonderful episodes coming up next. On Tuesday, you will see us reviewing Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
Not Rocky Horror Picture Show, unfortunately.
Nope.
Rocky, I know.
The boxing movie.
Rocky the boxing
Sylvester
movie.
Sylvester Stallone movie.
Which was given to us by RJ, our wonderful sound guy. So be on the lookout for that episode. We are looking for some listener suggestions. So if you have any idea of films that you want us to review, or you just really want to hear an in-depth analysis of any scenes, find us on our Facebook page. Find us on Twitter. Find us on Instagram. We are Postcut Podcast. And if you want to email us at listenermail@postcutpodcast.com. So please send us some emails. Write us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, and share us with your friends. Leave us a review on iTunes because it'll help get us out there and give us some really good feedback on what you guys want to hear in the future.
And so, thumbs up us on Spotify.
And yep. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you later.
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Postcut Podcast.
Next time on Postcut.
The movie is all about fighting yourself.
One of those people I do get emotional during films is when he's going through the rounds of the fight.
Rocky.
What are you doing? Stay down. You can't do this. You're not going to make it.
One of my favorite scores written by Mr. Bill Conti. Dude's a god.